Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, the most Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Elogi and Teresa Salmon. Say hi, guys.
Hey, hey.
Hello.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be for July 10th, 2021. It certainly feels like it outside. Especially if in your in the West Coast, or specifically Pacific Northwest, where those temperatures are... Well, they're getting a little better, but still obscenely hot. Yeah. Then, of course, over here, down here, well, we had to deal with a hurricane and a tropical storm.
Oh, fun.
Well, fortunately, the tropical storm basically, like, just glided to the east of us. So we got, like, a rain band, and that was it.
Oh, cool.
But we are in that part of the summer now where it likes to be sunny and then rain and then sunny and rain at the same time. Sometimes at different parts of the street at different parts of the time, sometimes raining on half the house while the other is bone dry. So,
weather in the humid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Summer in Georgia.
Yep.
Yeah, luckily that thing degraded pretty quickly once it hit the South Florida.
Yeah, but that's not really helping a whole lot for the folks up in up along the East Coast, because up in New York they've got flooding over there, for those who don't know.
Yeah.
Some of you may have seen the video, you may have not seen, of folks having to catch a subway in a subway station where the water was like waist deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw videos of people trying to potato bag it.
Yeah.
And realize that's not going to work.
Nope. nice try, but no, that's unfortunately not going to do it.
Too small.
Yeah.
You go for the extra big bags if you're going to try that.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope they start working on maybe building that seawall in the next few years, because I'm starting to get the sneaking suspicion they're going to need it a little sooner than they think they are. But anyway, so
people
yeah.
Think maybe not to live on an island. That's where the water's going to be rising pretty quickly.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, this week, what do we get to talk about? We got some really stupid lawsuits that are not going to win, no matter how much money they try to pull behind it. We got some news about the Tokyo Olympics, which is still ongoing, in spite of the fact that Japan is still having serious issues with COVID. There was a ransomware attack that has affected thousands of companies. Breaking records. A couple of statues are finally coming down in Charlottesville years after it was said that they were supposed to. We got some cancellations and entertainment news, including finding out where the second season of The Witcher is going to be on Netflix. And we got some Marvel news as well. So, small little group of news, but definitely not without anything to talk about. So, yeah. Let's go ahead and start off as we always do. Teresa, what have you been doing this week?
We have, we did watch the first episode of Loki, and mm-hmm. we are quite behind in the MCU. So we've been working on that, and mm-hmm. we watched Thor Ragnarok a couple nights ago. And last night we started Infinity Wars, but we had to pause for a phone call, so we'll be picking that back up.
Mm-hmm.
And, moving on from there, I've been still playing a lot of Phantasy Star Online 2. Mm-hmm. And I've been playing House at Fata Morgana, which is a graphic novel, or not a graphic novel, a visual novel.
Mm-hmm.
And that got a re-release with the follow-up, and I guess there's like a third part of the story. Mm-hmm. And it's a digital only on Switch, although Limited Run Games did do a physical release for this, I think, when it came out March, April-ish this year, I mm-hmm. believe. Yeah. That one, that one's hard to get a hold of, physical release, if you didn't do it when it came out. But, you know, it's on the Steam sale for like half off. So $12.50, I've got at least the first story, and it seems really, really long. I am still in the first chapter, and my gosh, I have played probably 7 hours of the story. And it's quite comprehensive and quite engrossing, and I highly recommend it. I'm sure people have talked about this before, but yeah, buy it, watch it. So we've also been watching some of our usual stuff. Oh yeah, we've been watching a little bit of Bob's Burgers, but we're really slow rolling that because we are so close to being up to date. So, so close. Yeah. A lot of Dr. Katz being watched. And for shits and giggles, I decided to follow Jonathan Katz on Twitter to see what the hell he's been up to for the past 30 years. Still a funny guy. Still, a, you know, a, his style of funny guy. And we're still watching through MASH again, but not every episode because we've already done that. We did that probably about 7 years ago where we watched through everything. And we picked up Ghost Stories again because we haven't watched all of them. Holy shit. I'm pretty sure our 14-year-old is getting way more of an education than we could ever give him just from this one anime, or, you know, the dub.
Yeah. What anime is this again?
It's Ghost Stories.
Yeah. Okay.
And very, very topical in a way, where you could definitely tell the time frame that they made that dub.
Yeah, that whole dub, really, that whole experience is very like 2005 to 2006.
Yeah, which actually predates him. But you know, he's used to watching shit that's older than him. He likes it. He's got it going on. And then today we found a fucking amazing restaurant.
Yeah,
I knew it was there.
What style? What?
It's cuisine. A ramen restaurant.
Oh, okay.
And we never went to that one. We went to the Korean barbecue right in the same shopping plaza with it. We went there a couple of New Year's ago and spent New Year's Eve there. But we didn't go because one of our friends had recommended this ramen place in Mount Prospect. And we went with a different friend. We went with a different couple because, you know, we have mutual friends. They've been talking about it and talking about it. And, dudes, I did not dig it at all. So when this ramen place opened up 2 years ago, I didn't go. And it's called Kitakara, which reminds me of Kitty Cat. So... Well, Kitakana? Oh, okay, sorry, I got it wrong. Kitakana. And I'm not a huge ramen fan. So these guys, they eat ramen all the goddamn time. There's this really good black garlic ramen that you can order on Amazon. Totally recommend it. They say that it's the bomb. But when I have noodles, I really don't like them to be in a soup or in a broth. So my style of noodles is noodles with something, but, you know, eat it like spaghetti, not eat it like soup.
You're less of a ramen and more of a pho type person.
Even pho has too much broth. You know, and I'll eat some of it, but I'm always getting the banh mi or whatever. So for this one, I got their pork bun, which like... What did I say? I said, I don't even know what this could be made out of. It could be made out of angel shit because it is fantastic, but I don't even know what it is, but I'm going to eat it to death anyway. So good. And it was a different type of pork bun than I've had at other places. So it had the usual really light, fluffy, porky bun dough. I don't even know what it's called. And it was kind of in a sandwich shape. And inside of it was the seared pork. And it was kind of, it was like a C-shaped sandwich. And it had the sauce there. Just fucking amazing. Oh, my God. So you guys are coming to visit me, right? So I could take you there? I mean, get on a plane. You should be here tomorrow because it's that fucking good. And then believe, I got...
Huh? Believe me, if I could afford it, I would totally visit Chicago.
You know, we've been trying to figure out, like, if after our kid is gone, you know, off to college or whatever, where do we want to live somewhere else? And, you know, Chicago is second city, mm-hmm. but our food is second to none. You're never going to eat as well anywhere, even New York, than you are mm-hmm. in Chicago. Because we've got every goddamn food.
Yeah.
It's really easy to be fat here.
That's kind of the reason why the New Yorkers have to make fun of your pizza so much, because...
It's true. It's true. But then there was something else that I got, and I can't remember what it was, but it was, again, seared pork cutlets in rice mm-hmm. with the sauce. And... ungodly amazing. And I did mm-hmm. try Scott's Ramen. Scott's Ramen was great. Their gyoza was perfect. Mm. I have never had a better gyoza sauce than what they had there. So, yeah, it makes me want it to be winter mm-hmm. so I can go there on a cold winter night and warm up my soul. Mm. So, yeah, I am absolutely over the moon about finding this restaurant and trying it, you know, just kind of out of the blue today at lunchtime. It was great. And yes, if you ever come to the Chicago suburbs, you have to visit there. Mm. So that's what I've been doing.
All right. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I am still kind of finalizing this move stuff. Just waiting for the last couple things and to get a exact date of moving in. But that might be next weekend. So.
Ah.
If we don't have any shows that weekend, that's going to be why.
All right, that's fine.
We can take a week off on that stuff, so that'll be sure. fine. But until then, I've been just kind of watching some stuff. I've finished up watching the rest of the MCU movies I've been working on. It's basically from Winter Soldier on
mm-hmm.
through to Endgame.
Mm.
Definitely fun to kind of watch them in sort of quick succession so that you can kind of see a lot of the ways they tease out things like Cap America using the Mjolnir,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of hinted at in, I think, Age of Ultron, that he's potentially able to grab it, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. As well as various other things. I hadn't seen Ant-Man and all that, so... pretty fun to kind of go through that stuff
mm.
and have a better grasp of how everything kind of links together
mm-hmm.
versus kind of seeing them in random order for the most part.
Yeah.
So that's been fun. Then I just started watching some stuff on Netflix. There's Manifest, mm-hmm. which mm. I think is a NBC show that kind of came to Netflix, kind of got a big following there.
Mm-hmm.
But then got canceled by Netflix after three seasons. So, but it's an interesting show where this flight 828 is going. And it's made up of a lot of people that decide to or are forced to sort of take another flight. After the original flight they had was overbooked. And so they go flying. They get to this rough turbulence. Then as they land, they get redirected to another airport and find out that it is about 5.5 years later. Despite it only seeming like, you know, a few hour flight
mm-hmm.
for them from, I guess, Jamaica to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That something has happened that's caused them to disappear for 5.5 years. And they're kind of dealing with the fallout of that. As a lot of people sort of find out about family members that, you know, maybe passed away or found new families or whatever happened.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go through many of those people, but the main family had... the father and the kid, one of the kids, they're twins, boy and a girl. The boy goes with him. on this flight, and the father's sister, who was engaged with a guy that she was not sure if she was going to follow through on it. I think I had decided that she was going to call it off and return the ring.
Yeah.
But has time to do it for her, essentially. But yeah, they land, find out this is 5.5 years later. You know, the cops and the feds start getting involved. Not sure what to make of this, and then start seeing some weird stuff happening as a couple of people start hearing voices, and they're not sure what the hell's going on. I think it's described as the calling.
Yeah.
So I'm only a few episodes in so far, but it's been pretty good so far, kind of trying to figure out what's going on. All the weird
What's the name of this again, and is it Stephen King?
It's Manifest.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's based on anything. I could check here. Doesn't seem like it.
Okay. Interesting premise.
Yeah. Sort of if like, you know, one of the flights that disappeared in real life in the ocean ended up just showing up randomly years later, that kind of thing. So it kind of has like a little bit of a, like a Lost vibe, except they don't crash on an island.
Yeah.
They just land as planned, except nobody knows what's going on because their, you know, cell service is off, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty neat show. I'm going to keep watching it. The only actors I really notice is the father was one of the leads in Once Upon a Time, the Disney show that's kind of modern retelling of fairy tales kind of thing. I think that's it for the people I recognize, but seems like a pretty good cast. Excited to watch more of that. But I also watched I Think You Should Leave, the new season of that, which is the sketch comedy show from, I forget what his name is, Tim Robinson, former SNL writer, I believe, who ended up getting his own show here. It's very ridiculous and absurd comedy kind of thing. There's some fun skits here and some big name comedians in here, like Bob Odenkirk shows up for a sketch. Tim Heidecker shows up for some stuff. There's one that's just a ridiculous like fake commercial about this girl's called like Tammy Craps, something like that. But they keep saying you have to be over 60 lbs to play with this or else you get affected by the poison that's in the doll, because the original dolls had some disgruntled worker that just kept farting inside the dolls. So they use this low-grade poison, but you have to be over 60 lbs to survive it. Also makes you actually sick. It's a lot of ridiculous comedy bits where, you know, usually it's involving Tim Robinson being the most ridiculous person in the sketch. Maybe nothing that stands out so much as like the sketch in the first season where he's kind of embarrassed at trying to open the door the wrong way, but just keeps going with it until he breaks the door and then gets out that way. Some stuff like that, but yeah, it's well worth checking out. It's maybe like 6 episodes. They're like less than 20 minutes each, so it's pretty easy to burn through it in an hour or two. So while we're checking out, as for games, just been playing some of the stuff I've gotten from the summer sale. There's Power Wash Simulator, which I streamed last night. Did a couple more areas. One of them was like a, I could call it like a bungalow house. That's so the first house you do is just all the shit in the backyard is dirty, not the house. This one, the house itself is dirty. So you're kind of going through washing all the bits. There's a porch in the back part of the yard that you kind of have to go through. I think to get on the roof, all that. So did about half of that and then came back after the stream to finish it up. The other one was a playground. That was weirdly dirty in the sense of like the benches, the trash cans were dirty. It has this like big plastic ground around most of it. Mm-hmm. That's like a lot of it was dirty, but not all of it. So it's like weird. And then there's just the playground itself, like a spinner thing that kids can get on, mm-hmm. you know, spin around so you can hang on. There's like a Stegosaurus slide as well. So there's like a lot of nooks and crannies to get into. Mm-hmm. There ended up finishing it up earlier today. That one took a little while, but that was pretty good. Then I cleaned off a dirt bike, which I don't think you would use a power washer for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But they had it here. I washed off a Mars rover, which is pretty fun. Despite there not being really any water to do it with. But it was in like the special section of the game that just has some very silly places to clean off. There's even like footprints in the dirt that you can go fall to a hatch that I assume has aliens in it.
Yeah.
But outside of it was a green gnome, like a green skin gnome. So there's that. They added in the most recent update, added a couple of new jobs. There's like an RV and some other stuff. But they also added a challenge mode. I think it's initially set around the van that you do at the beginning of the game. Where one of them is for washing it the fastest. So you're kind of trying to get through it as fast as possible. And the other one's for doing it with the least amount of water possible. So you're trying to figure out how much to go for the sort of controlled 0-degree sprays or the surface area to clean at once, but you're using more water, that kind of thing. That one I managed to get a silver on. It's about just under 20 liters, but the gold is for 15. That one's pretty interesting to do. The time one, I just fucked up and got a bronze. Just tried to go fast as possible and ended up leaving enough sloppiness that just kind of became an issue. But yeah, still fun. They're still adding stuff to it, as it's an early access, but it's a pretty fun game to play. Streamed today, earlier, Phantom Abyss.
Yes. It's
the new Devolver Digital game.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially a roguelite where you're trying to navigate these temples that I think it's 4 sections, at least for this first area, like biome type of temples. You're trying to get through 4 sections. Usually towards the end, you run into this statue that you can use to get perks or refill health if you've taken damage, that kind of thing. But the neat thing is that each generated temple can only be completed once, and you only get one attempt at it. So if you die, your run turns into a phantom. So the next time somebody plays that temple, they see your ghost sort of going around doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the ones I played had nobody had played it before. Most of them had like 1 or 2 usually. The one of them had 11.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like we were just seeing a huge crowd of these phantoms just running around. The way you get around, you can run, jump, you can crouch, you can slide if you're crouching as you're running. You can pick up this whip that lets you it is used like a grappling hook.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of use it to reach higher up areas. It can lead you into some bad places because there's some moving platforms, and it's taking you to the spot where you grab it. So you have to be careful you're not grabbing on the wrong side. That pulls you into what is going to be an empty space kind of thing. But it's usually pretty good about that stuff. There is fall damage, and you try to hit the crouch button to do like a rolling landing to save yourself some damage. But I usually found a good way to just whiff it every time. So didn't get that far. I got to the nearly the end of the third of four sections a few times, but not anywhere past that. But still enjoying that. That's a pretty good game. Looking forward to putting some more time into it. And when you beat some of the stages, it gives you like a code that you can share out to people to try out that stage. And if you look at it, it looks like a code for crypto. Like, mm-hmm. Here's my account. Send me, you know, bitcoins at this address, kind of thing. Mm. That is weird, but I'm going to have to see if other people have any that I can try out and see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been it for that. And let's see. I also got The Longing on Steam, which is a neat adventure game where, if you saw during the, I think, Nintendo Direct when it got announced for Switch, it's kind of an adventure game where there's this king that is in this cave for 400 days. He creates you. You're like some sort of creature that is supposed to, I don't know, hang out for the 400 days. And so you could just get through the intro, quit out, and just come back in 400 days real time to see what happens. But if you go and explore the caves, you can find, you know, books that you can read that'll speed up time while you're reading them. So one of them is Moby Dick. So usually when I'm quitting out, I have him start reading Moby Dick.
Yeah.
It's the entire book. It's like 1,200 pages, something like that. So you can sit there and read it if you want. I maybe made it like 2 pages in before I was like, no, I'm good. but you can have him read that. There's a few others, like a poem book and a couple other things. There's one just his journal that he's writing observations down and has some questions about how things work, which you can figure out how they find answers to that kind of stuff. And then you'll see it crossed out and have the answer written next to it, that kind of thing. There's a funny bit where you run into some areas where you can't do things, and he just adds it to a list of his disappointments, which is just like achievements of things that you can't do at all. Like trying to climb up this area that you can't, that you find out is not a way it's designed for you to climb up. So he kind of has 3 of these so far. I think I have to get 5 to unlock something. But yeah, there's like areas where I'm waiting for this hole to fill up with water, then I can swim across to the other side. I just today got to jump down off of this ledge because there's moss growing on this pile of rocks. And I guess today was the day that it was big enough that he could actually land without killing himself. I don't know how that works, but that let me get a mattock, or pickaxe, as you might call it, to start digging out some of these crystals that I guess I can use to hang out in his like little home area. What else? With that mattock, I'm just having him carve out more of his room. Sort of digging into the wall to make some more room for that. There's a couple other things I can use it for, so I'm going to try that stuff out. But it's been pretty cool so far, just kind of learning more about the area you're in. There's like a big mini map you can find in this one room. As you just hang out there, it pulls out into a more defined version of that map, instead of just these carvings that you may not necessarily recognize. The other thing is you can mark down areas as places you remember. So then you can just tell him, like, oh, go here. And you can just let it sit as he walks over there slowly and come back. So it's kind of a game that's kind of got some elements of, like, idle games, but kind of mixes that with an art adventure game. You're trying to figure out these puzzles and these things that you kind of have to just wait it out. But it has plenty of ways you can do drawings and all this other stuff that as you hang out in your room, kind of time goes faster than if you just leave them out and about elsewhere. So it's a neat little adventure game that's kind of has some nice elements to it. And I've also been playing some Genshin Impact. I got to Adventure Rank 20 on that. mm-hmm. Which adds a battle pass, among other things. Which is weird. That one ends in 9 days, I think. So I'm not going to really mm-hmm. do much to it. It's a neat little thing. Kind of weirdly adds an extra thing to the menus.
Mm-hmm.
So where it was kind of perfectly at like 20, now it's at 21. As it just kind of forces yeah. itself in there. Just adds, changes how I'm, moving around that when I'm trying to get to, you know, the character section to do some upgrades, but now I can ascend my characters mm-hmm. that are at level 20, so they can go up to level 40. Same with the weapons and the accessories that you can equip as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that lets me do some more damage and all that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
As well as start to get extra abilities. There's a whole thing with abilities that you can't do until you're ascended to unlock that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got on that snow mountain you were talking about, Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
That shit's fucked.
Oh yeah.
I did get to the one point on it where you can, you know, do your upgrades for your stamina and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was like, all right, I've had enough of this, and warped out.
Yeah.
You have to get special collectibles just for that area.
Yeah.
To upgrade it. But yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
All right. As far as gaming has been concerned for the last week, I've basically been playing two games. I've been playing Golf Story and The Silver Case, which is a game I'm actually doing for review. Fortunately, it doesn't have an embargo on it, so I can talk about it. This is a early... The Silver Case is a early Suda51 game from his studio. And it's basically a visual novel adventure game where you are... It has, like, two different storylines. There's one where you're playing as a policeman who was originally part of... Okay, so this particular game takes place in the 24 Wards, which is a sort of mini-universe that a bunch of Suda51's earlier games take place in. If you've played Killer 7 or Sunflower Rain, then you're familiar with this particular area. It's a kind of common location that he used to use back in the day. But basically, the whole idea is that around the turn of the millennium, there's a part of... I'm trying to remember what part of Japan it is, but it's basically reorganized into 24 districts because of population growth. And you are playing this guy... Well, one of the storylines is... You are playing a policeman who was part of a specifically like a sort of like not really like a SWAT team, but like a sort of part of what's known as the heinous crimes unit. And specifically, you were part of the heavily armored part where you were going in to try and find this serial killer named Kamui. But while you are trying hunting for him, he manages to take out two of your team members and then also almost kills the team leader. What happens is, after that happens, the sort of regular, sort of standard police part of the heinous crimes unit decides to sort of more or less adopt you into their particular department, and you're still trying to track down Kamui, but the whole case sort of turns into something really much stranger than that, because, again, it's a Suda51 game, and Suda51 does weird. That's the one storyline. The other storyline is you're playing this guy named Tokyo, who is a freelance reporter who's also working on the Kamui case, but he's working it from the outside in, because he's not actually in the police force, which means he's sort of your, like, voice on the street type of point of view. And he does a lot of, like, he occasionally, like, his one sort of lifeline in the heinous crimes unit is also one of your partners in it, but he's also notoriously tight-lipped. And basically, the way the game is done is it's very reminiscent in some ways of, like, Snatcher and Police Knots, you know, like an old-school, like, Hideo Kojima adventure game. But it's also a bit more advanced. It was originally a PlayStation game when it was originally put out. And the way it's usually played is there's the heavy visual novel part where it conveys itself through text dialogue. There's, you know, character graphics. You'll also encounter stuff like animatics, computer screens, on occasion even full motion video. Stuff like that. And then the, like, primary, like, actual action part of the game, adventure part of the game, is in, like, these fully three-dimensional, well, I say fully three-dimensional, we're talking fully three-dimensional by PS1 standards. Going around, inspecting things, moving objects around to inspect them, flipping switches, checking security codes and stuff like that. A couple of jump scares here and there that I've encountered. It is very much that kind of pseudo-51 game. And, it's very much of a particular era of PlayStation 1 games, because it's that tipping point before Sony went headlong into PS2, when they had basically opened the floodgates and said that, okay, if you want to make a game for our console, you can just be as weird and experimental as you want to. And that's definitely this game. when I'm good enough into that game, I'll have my review written and hopefully up on Smashpad, so look for that. And like I said, I'm also playing Golf Story. I'm almost finished with it. I've only got to play the Blue Moon Dunes tournament, which I am ass at, because that course is the most difficult in the entire game. Lots of water, lots of bunkers, huge amounts of distance between you and the hole, and just the wind changes like every other hole. So a lot of difficulty. Now, you probably have noticed both of these games I mentioned are Switch games, which is true. There's a reason for that. It's because my PlayStation 4 is just about ready to bite it.
That stings. That stings a lot.
it's a PS4 Slim, the 2 terabyte model that I got a few years ago. I had been having issues with it off and on over the last year. I had originally thought that it was because, like, you know, it wasn't getting enough, the fan wasn't giving off enough air or whatever, so I turned it on its side, and that worked for a little while. But eventually it got to the point where I was having to, like, reinitialize this thing, like, once a week. And then last week, it finally just was like, yeah, it's like, it's incredibly laggy now. If I turn it on, it basically has to rebuild the database every time I turn it back on. It's saying that I need to update the thing, even though every time you reinitialize it, it loads the latest version of the... Yeah, it's obvious. It's just the hard drive needs to be replaced at this point. So I have a couple options. I can always mail it to Sony, but as everybody who's ever had to deal with Sony knows, their prices are extortionist, if nothing else, and that's not even counting the shipping rates. There's a place here in Macon that I can go to called CPR Cell Phone Repair that, amongst other things, also fixes consoles. But the whole thing had cost me $150. And then I realized, you know, if it was the hard drive, I could probably just get another hard drive and replace it myself. because the actual process of replacing the hard drive is actually not that complicated. It mostly just involves some specialty screwdrivers and knowing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what I'm going to end up doing is after we're done here, I'm going to send a message over to Phil and see what he recommends, because he's probably going to and see if there's a particular hard drive he would recommend for me to get. If I got it downgraded just 1 terabyte, I'm fine with that. It honestly doesn't make a whole lot of difference. And on top of that, just the regular crazy summer weather that we get in Georgia, like I mentioned earlier, one part of the house, it'll be pouring down rain. Other part of the house, it's bright and sunny.
If you want to strangle me more than usual today,
yeah,
we've had our air conditioner off for 24 hours.
Oh Lord.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna eat it up while we got it, but yeah.
And of course we had that tropical storm that came through, which fortunately, like I said earlier, ended up basically depowering pretty quickly once it hit land. But that's not much, much help for folks going up the coast, because it gained a little bit more power, and like we said, it's flooding in New York. So, all right. So with that, that's about it. Anything we want to add before we move on?
Oh, I forgot I've been playing new Pokemon Snap. I don't think it's of any interest to you guys, but there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a big grabby title for any of us, honestly. Yeah.
All right then. Well, it is, with that said, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today I wanted to talk about a guy that is, he's one of those individuals that unless you're like in computer or technology circles, you probably haven't heard of him. But if you are, he's a guy who's kind of a legend, who also just so happens to be kind of a gross human being in general. And no, I'm not talking about McAfee.
Yeah, we already did him.
Yeah, we already did him. No, I'm talking about another dude, a guy who was kind of a hero, Steve Wozniak, who, weirdly enough, is still very much alive. But he's important mostly because he was one of the early guys who worked at Apple back when they started in the 70s. And also just because his whole story and like his subcultures and stuff he was involved in, he's a very good example, like a very good like interest, a very good image of like what, you know, hacker culture and tech culture was like before, you know, the tech boom really took off. And that's a guy by the name of John Draper. Or as he's also known by his nom de guerre, Captain Crunch. And I'm going to tell you why he has that name in a second.
Awesome.
So before John Draper got heavy into the computer side of things, he was heavily into the telecommunications side of things. He was originally in the Air Force. He became very interested in sort of the way that old school telephones worked, especially, you know, after, and it's going to be important later, especially the type of telecommunications that came about after rotary phones became obsolete. And that's going to be important when I tell you in just a second. But, anyway, he, helped some service members make free phone calls home by devising access to a local telephone switchboard. That was in 1964. 67, he was at stationed in Maine, and he created a pirate radio station. And eventually he was honorably discharged in 68. He moved to Silicon Valley. But he also worked as an engineer and a disc jockey for KKUP in Cupertino, California. He became a hippie, long hair, marijuana, you know how it is. Here's where it gets important, where the story starts to get interesting. So While he was doing his pirate radio station thing, he decided to test the transmitter that he had. And so he broadcast a telephone number to listeners who were seeking feedback to gauge the station's reception. Because, again, it's a pirate radio signal, so doesn't quite have the stability as, like, the quote-unquote legitimate radio stations have. He got a call from a guy named Denny Teresi, who was involved in a subculture that was called phone freaking, which is and by freak, I mean P-H-R-E-A-K-S. Phone
right.
Freaks. Yeah. And basically phone freaks were the telecommunications version of computer hacking before computers were really a thing. Now, Denny Teresi and a lot of the other phone freaks were blind. And that's important because of what I'm about to tell you. Back in the 1960s, well up into the 1980s, most telephones in the United States operated using touch-tone keypads. And touch-tone keypads literally use audio tones. And every key had its specific tone. Now, the reason that so many phone freakers were blind was because they may not be able to see what the number is that they're pressing, but they can recognize what tone it is. And what they found out is that the way that these old school telephone networks operated, depending on audio tones you could emit, you could do everything from essentially go into operator mode and essentially create your own switchboard. You could create amongst other things, you could do dial tone free telephone number. Well, actually, that was later. But among other things, you could make toll free phone calls long distance. Now, as you can probably guess, that's a big no-no because that's toll fraud. And remember, when you're doing long distance telephoning, when your service provider is Ma Bell, well,
yeah, they want their money.
Yeah,
and they charged a lot of it back in the day. I know you guys are too young to remember, but long distance was a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
Quite expensive.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's how he got his name. You see, Captain Crunch cereal used to have a whistle they put out that was in the shape of a boatswain's pipe. And it was actually not John Draper who discovered this. It was Denny Teresi. But Draper sort of perfected the technique, and it sort of became his nom de plume. He found out that the switch, when used, emitted a 2600 hertz frequency, which was the same frequency that AT&T long lines used to indicate that a trunk line was available for routing a new call. So when he blew it into the phone, the tone would disconnect one end of the trunk line while the still connected sign entered an operator mode. This meant that you would... Now, the thing is, after 1980, you can no longer do this because it was limited to call routing switches that were used in in-band signaling. By 1980, they had switched over to a signaling system under 7, so which used out-of-band signaling, so pretty much rendered that kind of ability useless. But they found something else they could do. You see, both Draper and Teresi got to work designing a little device. And if you look at one of these, you'll look at it, it looks very, it's like, oh, it's just the keyboard for the keys for a touch-tone phone. It's called a blue box. And I'm going to see if I can find a picture of one of these here. yeah.
Mine is Doctor Who. That's going to be hard.
Well, that's a police box, but yeah, here we go. I'm going to go ahead and put this in the chat here. There we go. Okay, that is a blue box. Now, you can look at it, you say, okay, that's obviously the keys to a touch-tone phone. It's like, okay, so what does it do? Well, It's basically an electronic device that can be used literally. Its whole purpose is to be used for toll fraud. It generates in-band signaling tones formerly used within the North American long-distance telephone network to send line status and called number information over voice circuits, either being a telephone operator switchboard or technician console in a switching machine or a machine-to-machine. Basically, it allows a person and that like a lot of these, whenever they were used, they would usually plug them into like public telephones, you know, like outside of like a building or something. And usually, I mean, it's not terribly difficult to do. Apparently, it's a lot of this is just like a habit of like going into the guts of the phone and plugging it in. But it basically, it allows a private individual to call one number normally and redirect the call to a second number with billing registering only the first number. So in other words, the first number might be a toll-free 800 or information number, available number, an unassigned number, or even in some metropolitan areas, a local call. Then you could redirect it into another one, and you would only receive the charges for that first call without getting any charges for that second. So you could theoretically, and actually was done by Captain Crunch and other people, you could use a free 1-800 call through first and then redirect it to a long distance and never have to pay any money for it.
Yeah.
Now, that particular blue box that I just showed you, that's important because of who it was made for. That was actually a blue box that was designed by, not by Draper, but by Steve Wozniak, who was a friend and admirer of John Draper. And Draper actually helped him build it. You see, back in the late 70s, after the whole phone phreaking thing had basically faded out because, you know, the technology had started to gotten to the point where it was just no longer tenable. Yeah. Somebody told Draper's like, you know, if you wanted, you could probably take these blue boxes and you could make them and sell them to people. And one of those people that told him that was Wozniak, who was a engineering student at Berkeley at the time. And they met and went together and they went and set up a meeting to like come up with an idea of like, you know, maybe building blue boxes to sell. And he told him, yeah, but before I do that, John, I got to tell you, I'm going to bring my buddy Steve over here. And we're going to see, and of course, that other Steve turned out to be Steve Jobs. And they set up a small business selling blue boxes. And that's one of the blue boxes right there in that photograph. And eventually, of course, later on, they would start Apple Computers. And Draper actually worked as an independent contractor for them when they were starting out. He helped develop a device that could connect the Apple II computer to phone lines. Did I mention that John Draper also served some prison sentences for this shit?
I was just going to say, Scott used to work with a guy who passed away recently, mm-hmm. and he went to juvie for phone freaking back in the days, was a bit older than us.
Yeah.
You get caught sometimes.
Yeah. So what happened is phone phreaking basically came to light to the mainstream world when a journalist named Ron Rosenbaum wrote about the subculture for an article for Esquire. One of the things he did is he did a lot of interviews with Draper, which for the record, I mean, it was kind of a Draper was kind of ambivalent about it because to him, it wasn't really like he was doing anything wrong. Look, I don't really do that whole, because this is 1971. And like he said, you know, I don't really do a whole lot of like toll fraud stuff anymore. I'm more about, working and exploring the systems. In fact, he said in the actual article, which, by the way, if you ever want to look, the article is called Secrets of the Little Blue Box. And it goes like this. He's quoted as saying, "I don't do that. I don't do that anymore at all. And if I do it, I do it for one reason and one reason only. I'm learning about a system. A phone company is a system. A computer is a system. Do you understand? And if I do what I do, it is only to explore a system. Computers, systems, that's my bag. A phone company is nothing but a computer." Which, I mean, if you think about it, he's not exactly wrong. Of course, this ended up getting him arrested in 1972 on charges of toll fraud, and he ended up getting a year in prison and 5 years probation. But the thing is, that article is also what got Wozniak's attention. So, yeah. So you're probably wondering, okay, so what did this dude eventually also do? Well, he worked for Autodesk for a while in the 80s, where he made some video driver software. He ended up getting arrested again because he was charged in a scheme to forge tickets for the Bay Area Rapid Transit System. He was the, from 1999 to 2004, he was the chief technical officer for ShopIP, which was a computer security firm that designed the Crunchbox GE, which is a firewall device. He also became CTO at Intego, a software company that developed media delivery tools. You know, a bunch of different projects and, you know, entrepreneurial stuff. Some of it did okay, some of it didn't. Okay, here's the gross shit comes in.
Okay.
You ready for the gross shit? Here comes the gross shit. So, 2017. What's one of the big things that happened in 2017? The Me Too movement. Yeah. And so, sort of the culture in general kind of had this sort of period of, I don't want to necessarily call it upheaval, but self-inspection, where people started bringing forth stories of, like, you know, sexual improprieties and harassment and just overall bad behavior from various individuals. Well, a couple of hacking and security-related conferences, such as DEF CON, TOR CON, HOPE, you know, said publicly they had banned Draper from attending in the wake of allegations against him concerning unwanted sexual attention toward attendees. This ended up getting reported by BuzzFeed. And then the Parallax ended up bringing further allegations. Well, in the story, University of Pennsylvania computer science professor Matt Blaze asserted that Draper subjected him to a stalking campaign in the 70s. When he was a teenager and when Draper would have been in his 30s, additionally, Phil Lapsley alleged that Draper consented to an interview in exchange for a, quote, partially clothed piggyback ride.
Oh, boy.
Now, Draper denied some of these allegations in an interview with the Daily Dot. He didn't really answer about any of the others. He denied any of it was really sexual and said it was more of a, quote, energy workout employing techniques of, quote, applied kinesiology, a discredited form of alternative medicine of what she claims to be an advocate. Because, again, you know, hippie. Draper conceded that in some instances he may have experienced an erection during some of the encounters, which allegedly included massages of the leg and arm muscles, as well as squats and push-ups while carrying Draper's body weight.
Yeah, we know exactly where that.
Well, there is one more thing we need to add, and that comes from Craig Wilson Frazier, who was a writer who actually got one of those workout with Draper in an authorized biography. He said, "The first time I tried it, my drug-fueled paranoia went through the roof that it was about to turn sexual in some way, but of course nothing of that nature ever occurred." So, yeah, it's definitely creepy and definitely, like, kind of gross.
It's very, very questionable. Yeah. Very, very questionable.
So, basically, Draper, he's like 78 years old now. He's still, he's a computer programmer by, you know, by trade these days. He lives generally a nomadic lifestyle. He also doesn't really brush his teeth much. Yeah, people have always known this. If you ever look, find pictures of him, his teeth really look bad. Yeah, it's just kind of gross. He doesn't really bathe a whole lot either. But yeah, that's John Draper. A weird, weird individual who just so happens to be one of the most important individuals in the birth of modern American telecommunications. And that's American, and that's another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Something you realize about the tech scene is it's filled with a lot of people like that. I mean, we just mentioned McAfee earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, McAfee is a fairly extreme example. But, yeah. Yeah. All right. So, with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. And as well as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. Who's our first asshole of the week? Oh, you guessed it. It's the former president. He's suing Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for censoring him and suspending his accounts.
Yeah, claiming that his First Amendment rights were violated.
Uh-huh, because they're not a private corporation.
Yeah.
Yeah, the suits call for, I think these are each separate suits.
Mm-hmm.
The suits call for the court to order an immediate halt to social media companies' illegal, shameful censorship of the American people. Mm. We're demanding an end to the shadow banning, a stop to the silencing, and a stop to the blacklisting, banishing, and canceling that you know so well.
Mm-hmm.
So he is languishing without any attention, and this is his way to get it?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Because basically the statements that come out of his office are basically tweets.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That, you know, are just in
sentence form.
Mm.
Kind of. They're kind of like, you know, from the desk of,
yeah,
in all caps kind of shit.
But as you can probably guess, this is going to go nowhere because, again, this is privately curated spaces, which can, by law, make their own rules.
Yeah.
Rules which you are required to follow if you decide to do anything inside of them.
Yep.
And keep in mind, all three of these places don't really do a very good job of dealing with hate speech anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only been basically since the insurrection that they've tried to do anything.
Mm-hmm. If my guessing is that there's just a couple lawyers who are taking this up simply because they know it's not going to work, but they get paid anyway.
Oh, probably.
Or at least think they are, considering who the client is.
Good point.
I guess also part of this is the infamous Section 230,
mm-hmm,
the Communications Decency Act that he wants somehow to be declared unconstitutional by a federal court, which I don't think is going to happen because these are pretty much likely just going to be shut down quickly.
Mm-hmm.
As they say here, let's see, Paul Barrett, an adjunct law professor, deputy director at New York University Center for Business and Human Rights.
Mm-hmm.
Trump has the First Amendment argument exactly wrong. He describes lawsuits as DOA or dead or on arrival,
mm-hmm,
because the First Amendment applies to government restrictions on speech, not the actions of private companies.
Mm-hmm.
Even conservative experts voice skepticism about Trump's legal case.
Yeah.
The social media platforms are private property, not the government town square, and are well within their First Amendment rights to refuse to carry speech of third parties. This mm-hmm principle holds even with the former president of the United States, his constitutional right of every citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Malugin at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. This lawsuit is a publicity stunt intended for political gain, not a serious legal argument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, total agree.
But
it just can't go away.
And it'll be thrown out by the judge, and his followers won't care.
Yeah.
Because they'll just see it as yet another part of the conspiracy.
Yep.
Right
on the head.
Yeah. Now, for another fun bit of news. So, I think it was a couple weeks ago, Rudy Giuliani officially had his law license suspended in the in New York.
Yeah.
Well, his law license is now officially suspended by an appeals court in the District of Columbia.
Yep. Yeah, this was weeks after New York took similar action against him. He'll remain suspended in the nation's capital pending the resolution of his case in New York. According to the District of Columbia Appeals Court, yeah, it stems from his attempts to overturn the results of the 2020 election.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Giuliani made no public statement regarding this happening. He did retweet a post on Twitter criticizing the temporary suspension as just another gross miscarriage of justice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's retweeting a person whose Twitter profile says, Donald J. Trump is our chance to MAGA, love my wife, country, God, military, and our great veterans, vote red.
No, wow, they're just stringing together a bunch of bumper stickers now.
Yeah, it's the sort of...
Yeah.
It's basically turning into word salad.
Yep.
Very, very slowly, it's turning into word salad. And eventually, it's literally just going to be a sort of half-made sentence with a string of buzzwords. Yeah.
Did you guys see Trevor Noah's thing this week? He did a little bit with Sean Hannity. Mm-hmm. And made him out to be like he was doing some sort of rap battle. It was freaking funny. If you get a chance, look it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Speaking of word salad.
Yeah. And speaking of other legal shenanigans, you guys remember Michael Avenatti? He was the guy who briefly became Stormy Daniels' defense attorney.
Yeah.
During that whole scandal happened, which we now know to be true. He also got caught because apparently he was trying to extort people at the Nike Corporation. And this week he was sentenced to a 2.5-year prison sentence because of it.
Yeah, to extort up to $25 million from Nike by threatening the company with bad publicity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, convicted last year of charges including attempted extortion and honest services fraud in connection with his representation of an L.A. youth basketball league organizer who was upset that Nike had ended its league sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. U.S. District Judge Paul G. Gardeff called Avenatti's conduct outrageous, saying he hijacked his client's claims, and he used those claims to further his own agenda, which was extort millions of dollars from Nike for himself. Mm. So, yeah, going to prison where he belongs.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Remember when people, like, in the wake of the Stormy Daniels thing, was like, oh, he should run for president. It's like, what?
No.
He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
Don't trust lawyers.
Yeah.
Like, until they do other things.
Do not trust attorneys until they are no longer attorneys.
Until they do something that is not required of them as an attorney.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Because attorneys will do anything for money.
Oh, yeah.
Even commit crimes like this.
Yeah. But unfortunately, it's not all awful, because we do have a hero of the week, and that is young Zalia Avant-Garde, who is the first African-American kid to win the Scripps National Spelling Bee.
Yep. She's 14.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also not her only talent.
Mm-mm.
She is well-known as a great basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
Holds 3 basketball dribbling records in the Guinness World Records.
Yep.
Looking to set more. Also has a number of videos out there of her, like, juggling with basketballs. I think, like, dodgeballs and tennis balls and that kind of stuff. Like, mixing them all together.
Yeah. Cool.
She's from Harvey, Louisiana. Won this competition in $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yep. The competition's second black champion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah. Won it on a word called Maria.
Mm-hmm.
A genus of tropical Asiatic and Australian trees.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So good stuff there. So,
yep.
We're moving on from there to the proper show proper. And unfortunately, we have to say goodbye to the late, great film director, Richard Donner. Now, you may, if you're not familiar with the name Richard Donner, you are absolutely familiar with the films that he helped, that he directed. The Omen, 1976.
Are you, Damon?
Yep. Superman, 1978, starring Christopher Reeve. That was also him. Then in the mid-80s, he directed that all-time children's classic, The Goonies.
Oh, God, yes.
He also directed Scrooged in 1988. Then he started the Lethal Weapon film series.
Right.
Uh-huh. And then he also started a production company called The Donners Company, which ended up producing both Free Willy and X-Men. Yeah. So, yeah, he definitely had a legacy behind him. Let's see. And he also, what else did he do? He directed the Richard Pryor comedy, The Toy. He directed Lady Hawk, which is a classic 1985 fantasy movie. The 1994 Mel Gibson movie, Maverick. I remember that one.
He directed a number of episodes of The Twilight Zone.
Yep.
Including Nightmare at 20,000 Feet with William Shatner.
Yeah. There's a thing on the plane. Yeah. One of the most parodied scenes in, like, all of everything.
Yes.
There's a man on the wing of the plane. Because it's Bill Shatner, and anything Shatner is involved with is immediately, like, parodable.
And the gremlin is definitely not convincing at all.
Nope.
It's a man in a furry suit.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. Oh, and he also directed another Mel Gibson movie, 1997's Conspiracy Theory. He directed the 2003 Michael Crichton picture Timeline. Bunch of stuff. Scrooge. I mentioned Scrooge. He was also a producer for, like I said, Free Willy. He directed a bunch of Twilight Zone, as you said. Also Have Gun Will Travel. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Perry Mason. This kind of reads like a who's who of, like, 60s and 70s television. The Banana Splits Adventure Hour.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember when that thing was, like, run on syndication, like, late at night on Cartoon Network.
I had forgotten about it because I was so young when that played the first time.
Uh-huh.
And then Cartoon Network brought back scarring memories, and I just, you know, love them so much for that.
Yeah. I think now they still do it, like, late at night, but instead of on Cartoon Network, they do it on Boomerang.
Boomerang, yeah.
Yeah. Which is basically like where all the old syndicated cartoons they used to show on the regular channel went.
Yeah.
You know, Scooby-Doo and the like. But yeah, so he left a hell of a legacy behind him. And especially that first Superman movie.
Yeah. Jeez, God, yeah. It's probably the best one that he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe even more than Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. I mean, The Goonies, too. It's The Goonies.
Was good, but it wasn't Superman.
No.
Still, good shit.
Yeah.
And he lived a good long time, so we could be happy for that.
Yeah. So, goodbye, Mr. Donner. You will be missed. You made some amazing shit. All right, moving on from there. The Surfside condo that collapsed a couple weeks ago that has sort of brought to light the fact that building... That, you know, the sort of, again, people...
The deficiencies with HOAs. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With just overall greed with people who work in a condo who aren't willing to put up the money for needed repairs.
Yep. And of course, there should be some sort of building oversight to keep this from happening.
There was apparently a building flaw from the very beginning that nobody gave a shit about until it was too late. Yeah. The death toll has now risen to 86.
God damn.
Yeah.
You guys realize I live in a mid-rise condo, right? There's under 70 units here.
Yeah, but you also live in Chicago, Illinois.
Where there's no sinkholes and no fault lines.
And I'm pretty sure the building codes are a little stronger, too.
I would say fucking very likely.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily worry about water levels rising
and yeah.
Damaging things as much as Miami would.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's now 86. Apparently there was a cat that was found alive that apparently belonged to, it belonged to one of the families that lived there that apparently had moved away or something. And they found the cat alive and it was returned to its owners. So that's good.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not all bad. Again, like, one of the major problems is they have to deal with the fact that, you know, there are still, like, tiny little fires that are burning inside of the rubble here and there. And, of course, the nature of the fact that, you know, it's standing on top of a swamp, which has its own little issues to deal with. Yeah. And then, of course, there was the fact that they had to deal with a hurricane.
Yeah.
There was that, too.
Yep.
Because, again, Miami, Florida. yeah, so they got that. And now for COVID news, the Delta variant is now the dominant variant in the United States.
God damn it, that went fast, didn't it?
Yep.
Yep.
Now, fortunately, we're all vaccinated.
We are, but not everybody we know is.
In fact, my parents still haven't gotten the shot.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Now,
I'm sorry.
My aunt has gotten the shot. My cousins have gotten the shot. My grandmother has not gotten the shot, but she can't get the shot because she's allergic to it. Some of my other relatives have gotten the shot.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, I want to be fair. Remember, they, like me, also had COVID a couple of months ago.
Okay, yeah.
So the antibodies are still there, but... do those antibodies stand up to the new Delta variant?
No.
Not very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell them you'll pee in one spot of the house every day until they get it.
Yeah.
I wish there was something that we could do, but we do not have dominion over other people.
Yeah.
My brother is the one holdout in the family. And
even your mom has gotten it?
Oh, yeah. My mom got it, but my little brother, no.
Yeah,
he's type 1 diabetic.
Yeah.
He's going blind.
I've been thinking about contacting my parents' church and talking to their pastor and like thing is like, hey, would you like ever like consider like holding like a vaccine drive for your parishioners? You know, just to help me convince my parents that they might need to go ahead and get the shot.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't want my parents to die or to get sick with some horrible thing that could turn into long COVID or cause horrendous hospital bills. And nobody wants to see them sick again. I mean, my God.
Yeah. You can ask them if they like your grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe they'd like to keep her around as long as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, this...
the positive peer pressure thing from the pastor is a very, very decent idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the Delta variant now accounts for more than 51% of COVID cases in the U.S. Parts of the U.S., the Delta strain accounts for more than 80% of new infections, including states like Missouri, Kansas, and Iowa, two of which border Teresa's state.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The Delta variant is already causing 74.3% of infections in Western states, including Utah and Colorado.
Yep.
58.8 in southern states such as Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Oklahoma.
And you want to know what the worst state is? Take a wild freaking guess.
Florida or Georgia?
Neither. It's Alabama. Texas?
Oh. Forgot them.
Somehow even Mississippi beat them.
Well, you guys are really thankful for Alabama right now.
Yeah. Only about 37% of the state of Georgia has gotten fully vaccinated, whereas like over, I think like close to half of the state has gotten at least one jab. Which is better than nothing.
You would like to see it way, way, way better than that.
Yeah, especially because we have a surplus, and you can get signed if you can schedule a shot very fucking easily.
Well, at this point, the people who have not had it have been willfully avoiding getting it, and
They're the sort of people that you can bring any evidence you want to. They've dug in their heels, and they're not going to change.
Yeah.
Unless something tragic happens to them.
Yeah. And I'm like,
I think they're still convincing that could happen. I still think the pastor thing's a great idea.
Yeah. Like, keep in mind, like I said, my parents have already had the disease. And, you know, I'm like, you got off easy that first time.
Yeah, they did. I would say that.
Like my mom, especially my mom, because my mom's a former smoker.
Yeah.
Actually, both my parents are former smoker, but my dad quit smoking before she did, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think that the people who are refusing the vaccination realize just how much they're absolutely killing us, because we don't want to see bad things happen to them, and they won't do what they need to do to take care of safeguarding their own bodies, and it just fucking kills me. And now they're using the
"my body, my choice" phrase for the being anti-vax.
I can't stomach it. And there's not a goddamn thing, really, in my case, that I can do about my friends and my one family member who, well, my brother-in-law won't either. Oh yeah, and his wife is 38 weeks pregnant. So yeah, I know I've mentioned that before. She keeps getting more pregnant, and he keeps getting more unvaccinated.
Yeah.
I've had a few blow-ups about that this weekend.
Yeah. At this point, I'm just thinking, like, maybe the government should just hire people with, like, sniper rifles that have, like,
yeah,
guns, you know?
Could we? Please?
I mean, at this point, I'm at, like, if we gotta fucking, like, tackle people in the middle of the street to get this shit into them.
Can
you believe that these knuckleheads have started to make me hate freedom? Like,
yeah. I get you. I get what you're saying. And that is sad.
Every time I see these ridiculous fact checks on Twitter, I'm like, oh, no, the COVID vaccine does not violate the Nuremberg Code. I'm just like, what fucking people are pushing this shit? Are saying it was 99% some sort of chemical thing, which somebody showed what 0.1% would look like, and it's like black.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, those vaccines are clear, right? 99% would be pretty much pure black, like almost solid.
Mm-hmm.
And not be putting the stuff into your body. They've already put out what the ingredients are.
Oh, that's Nuremberg definitely code. Thunder. Ooh, it's getting rumbly outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Luckily, we're not hearing it, so.
Nope.
No. Yeah, you would hear the planes before you heard that. Like I said, the windows are open for now.
Yeah.
Kind of humid, though. I think that's not going to happen much longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got the Madison Cawthorn saying, like, Biden's going to be going door-to-door. Vaccinating people. It's like, no, he's not.
Wish.
It's the same shit they say when Obama came into power. It's like, he's going door to door to take your guns.
And the same shit, like Sean Hannity was saying, the same stuff he's talking about with Biden. He was saying the same shit about Hillary Clinton. Mm. It's just the same tired old rhetoric. And I don't know why people aren't recognizing it for the bullshit that it is.
Yeah. Saying, let's see. Oh, well. Democrats are going to go door-to-door to every home in America and force vaccinate us. It's actually a dry run when they show up and take away our guns and Bibles.
Don't they realize most Democrats are Christian? There is a very small minority of us who are not.
Goddamn, Biden is a fucking hardcore Catholic.
Yeah.
But Protestants don't see that as Christian.
Well, a very large number.
Yeah.
But he's actually open-minded enough that Catholic bishops see him as a threat.
Well, that he's separating his political life from his religious life when it's prudent or required, really.
We had one of our...
He wants to follow the Constitution.
We had one of our Senate candidates to replace Rob Portman. They say, like, what was it? The church and the Constitution should not be separated. But the Bible and the Constitution should not be separated.
Bullshit.
It's like, it's like the two on the GOP side are the dumbest fuckers.
Mm-hmm.
There's that guy and there's the dude that wrote Hillbilly Elegy.
Yeah.
Who's also an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And deleted his tweets criticizing Trump.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually there's a good book to follow up and counter Hillbilly Elegy. And it's somewhere on the coffee table. We borrowed it from the library. But I think the gist of it, the title is What You're Getting Wrong About Appalachia. And if you guys ever make it over to the library, I recommend picking that up and giving it a look-see.
Basically, I hope Tim Ryan wins the Senate seat because the two people he's facing are the fucking dumbest people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I hope people are smart enough to see that.
Mm.
One's talking about, you know, fighting for the workers, and the other ones are arguing about the stupidest shit.
Yeah.
Isn't it grand?
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of COVID bullshit, the Tokyo Olympics are still going to take place, but it's going to happen under a COVID state of emergency without spectators.
Yeah. It's going to be a wild Olympics.
Yeah.
Probably not going to let the people go out of the stadium.
No.
Pretty much for the village they'll have for them.
Yeah.
Where they
although we're probably
McDonald's all the time.
Yeah, or although we're probably going to get like a story of how some of them snuck out and they're going to end up getting it and then they're going to spread it to all the other fuckers.
That could be.
But then again, you know, if you're in Olympic Village, I mean, you're basically in a closed off space with a bunch of other people who are on peak physical condition. So, other than training, what else are you going to do but like drink and fuck the whole time?
That's exactly what they're going to do.
That's what Olympic Village literally is. Like, any person who has ever been in the Olympics will tell you the same damn stories about what it's like to stay there.
Supply of condoms and McDonald's and drinks and all that shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
That shit's going to happen. And then we got another thing. So there is a global ransomware attack that happened that is the largest on record, and it has affected thousands of companies worldwide.
Okay, I missed this news. What went down?
Yeah, this is related to the Revil gang who got in on JBS a couple months ago, the meat processor in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I was also one of the biggest meat producers here in the U.S. where they got like $11 million from them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this current attack infected thousands of businesses in at least 17 countries, largely through firms that remotely manage IT infrastructure for multiple customers.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of having that outside company that is... getting infected and just spreading it all around. So they were demanding ransoms of up to $5 million, but late Sunday, it offered in a posting on its dark web website in a universal decryptor software key that would unscramble all affected machines in exchange for $70 million in cryptocurrency.
Mm.
And so, yeah, the FBI is investigating this, and Biden's given them the full resources of the government to investigate this incident.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of see if the Kremlin is involved in this.
Yeah.
Because this was one of the topics that he brought up to Putin when they were at the, a month ago, like the G7 summit.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So yeah, a lot of shit going down from companies and such that just don't update to more modern software and systems.
Mm-hmm.
So they get... hit pretty hard on this kind of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see what else we got. So you guys remember that point when the Suez Canal basically got blocked?
Yeah, and I remember the part where the steamship lines are still insisting upon building really, really big ships.
Yeah.
Even in the wake of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the ship that basically did that, you remember, was called the Ever Given. Well, after the thing was unfastened, it was basically seized by canal authorities for a time, just, I guess, just to figure out what the hell they were going to do. Well, this week it finally left the Suez Canal. So,
yeah, it's been on hold for over 3 months amid a financial dispute.
Yeah.
The company that owns it is Japanese, Shoei Kisen Kaisha Limited. There's a settlement with canal authorities over compensation amounts following weeks of negotiations and court standoff.
The three K's, they didn't call it KKK when they came to America. But that's the original company that Scott worked over 20 years for. But they broke off K-Line America from K-Line Japan and started a new one. I actually worked there for like 4 years.
Yeah.
Crazy shit. But in Japan, everybody owns everybody.
Yeah, this settlement deal was signed in a ceremony on Wednesday in the Suez Canal city of Ismailia.
Mm-hmm.
After which the vessel was seen sailing to the Mediterranean Sea. Yeah, so even had like a party, essentially, ending this whole ordeal.
It's crazy.
Yep, so that thing is gone and we'll never hear of it again.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wait until the next big storm topples over about a few hundred containers. You might hear about it.
Yeah.
Just because it has name notoriety. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that won't be because the boat just decided to start turning randomly and gets stuck in a tiny canal.
Yeah.
At least tiny for these kinds of ships.
All right. So, next story comes all the way from Charlottesville, which basically became the epicenter of the probably the pinnacle and largely the downfall of what originally was the American alt-right, where people basically finally recognized it for what it was, and it was largely forced into, we want to say it's forced in the shadows, not really, but whatever little bit of mainstream credibility it had basically died that day. Sadly, it was not the only thing that died that day, but that's another story. But for those of you who may not remember why that whole rally started in the first place, it was because of debates about removing the statue of Robert E. Lee. The one of him, I think, on a horse.
Yeah.
And that was sort of like the epicenter that started like the whole idea of the Unite the Right rally that happened. Well, this week, the city of Charlottesville finally removed that statue of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson today.
Yep.
That took a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably wanted to make sure that no shit was going to be started.
Mm-hmm.
After the last time, you know, a woman died.
Yeah. Yep.
And they're not sure what they're going to do with it yet. Seems like 10 groups have expressed interest in the statues. Mm-hmm. According to a statement from the city. But yeah. It's good they're finally done with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they have any more around. They might.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the third statues they've taken down. So, at least doing the right things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, ultimately, those bunch of dingbats actually failed. And the statue has come down. Thank goodness. Yeah. So, that's a couple of more old, mass-produced Confederate monuments that are now fucking dead. Gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, With that out of the way, it's now the time to go on to some science news. In China, a group of scientists figured out how to make flexible ice.
Yeah, this is...
Heard that right? Flexible ice.
Yeah. Yeah, so the way they got this all to work is that, let's see, strands of this measuring just 4.4 micrometers in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
Could be bent to a near circular shape. When the pressure was eased, the strands returned to their original shape. To make the ice microfibers, the team channeled water vapor into a small electrical chamber. Mm-hmm. The temperature of the chamber was cooled with liquid nitrogen. Then a tungsten pin was placed inside and electrified to 2,000 volts, which served to attract the water vapor. Ice crystals formed on the pin, allowing the team to grow the microfibers. Mm-hmm. Albeit at a very slow rate. And they experimented with different temperatures between 70 degrees below zero to 238 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. At the maximum cold temperature, the resulting microfibers showed surprising elastic properties, bending to a maximum strain of 10.9%. By contrast, normal ice has an elastic strain of 0.3%. The bendy ice approaches the theoretical limit of how flexible ice is presumed to be at 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still potential room for improvement. And as an unexpected bonus, ice was amazingly transparent. It means microfibers could eventually be used to transmit light, similar to fiber optic cables. So I just said this technology might eventually be leveraged to create tiny sensors capable of detecting air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Pretty neat stuff.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of more science stuff, scientists have actually figured out now how the northern lights on Jupiter actually work.
Yeah, it's been something they've been trying to figure out for 40 years now.
Oh, yes.
This whole weird thing that happens in the northern part of Jupiter, where they get flashing X-ray flares that happen there, but we haven't had necessarily the tech to really figure out what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily with the Juno spacecraft that launched in 2016, and the European Space Agency's X-ray telescope, the researchers found that the pulsating X-ray auroras are caused by fluctuations of Jupiter's magnetic field. Let's see. Yeah, on the Earth, the northern lights are driven primarily by solar winds, particles emitted during solar storms that flow out through space, tear through Earth's magnetosphere, creating colorful light show. On Jupiter, there are other factors at play.
Mm-hmm.
Jupiter spins much faster than Earth. It has the strongest magnetic field of any planet in our solar system. And what's more, Jupiter's third largest moon, Io, is covered by more than 400 active volcanoes, which pump out volcanic material into Jupiter's magnetosphere. The area controlled by a planet's magnetic field.
Mm.
The X-ray flares were first discovered in 1979. Yeah, with the simultaneous observations from Juno and the M.M. Newton X-ray telescope, they were able to link the X-ray pulses, which happen at regular intervals, with Jupiter's breathtaking auroras. So every 27 minutes, Jupiter produces a burst of X-rays. They gave us the fingerprints. We knew that Jupiter was doing this every 27 minutes. And then we could look at the Juno data to see what processes are also happening every 27 minutes. And what they found was as Jupiter rotates, it drags around its magnetic field, which is struck directly by particles of solar wind and compressed. These compressions heat particles, electrically charged atoms called ions, that are trapped in Jupiter's magnetic field. This triggers a phenomenon called electromagnetic ion cyclotron waves, E-mic waves. Guided by Jupiter's magnetic field, the ions surf the E-mic wave and eventually slam into the planet's poles, triggering the X-ray aurora. The next step for the research team would be to see whether this process is unique to Jupiter or if it happens on other planets, including ones outside our solar system.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they're looking at next as part of this process with this X-ray telescope or X-ray satellite. No telescope. So, yeah, neat stuff. Kind of finally solving this 40-year mystery.
Yeah. Dang.
Yep.
Science is cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, with that, we are moving on to the entertainment portion of the show. And first and foremost, HBO announced that they will not be renewing Lovecraft's Country for a second season.
Yep.
Are people pretty butthurt about that? I have no idea.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it, so yeah, people are not happy that they're just not renewing it.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll get picked up somewhere else.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Mm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's sad. Apparently, the second season was supposed to like take place in like this alternate America that's like separated with like that's ethnically segregated with like whole regions and with like ethnic enclaves and stuff like that. But whatever, maybe they'll make it a comic book.
Maybe.
That's generally what happens. Also, within 4 months of theater launch, Universal Films will exclusively hit Peacock. Peacock, of course, is NBC Universal's streaming service.
Yep. This also includes DreamWorks Illumination Focus Films. It's a multi-year deal. Tells ahead to Peacock for the first 4 months, as well as the last 4 months of the traditional 18-month pay one window, which pay one refers to the agreements between services and studios for first rights to stream films and content after their initial release. Mm. And yeah, for next year, they've got some big movies. The next Jurassic World movie, there's a new Jordan Peele horror film, another Minions movie, and a Puss in Boots movie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those will hit Peacock no later than 4 months after their cinema release.
Mm-hmm.
During the 10-month period between those two windows, they'll be on other services, like this next story.
Yeah, they signed a deal to bring those films to Amazon Prime after a Peacock run.
Yep. Okay. So yeah, they'll be getting that stuff afterwards. It'll be like 8 months after, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Yeah, I think that begins next year. So, kind of making deals with both of those services for these movies.
Yeah.
IMDb TV will exclusively stream a number of live-action anime titles from Universal's library, including The Invisible Man, Fast 9, and Sing 2. Anime films arriving on IMDb TV as part of the agreement include Despicable Me 2, How to Train Your Dragon 2, and Shrek 2. So there'll be stuff going there. I don't know if that's a service that people actually think about ever.
Mm-hmm.
Not really,
and
no.
Just the looking up who's in a movie or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. And then we had WitcherCon that happened this week, wherein we found out when season 2 of The Witcher will be premiering. It's going to be out on December 17th, and there's a teaser trailer out now that you can watch.
Yep, shows Ciri. Which looks pretty good.
Yeah. And we also got a bit about the anime movie The Witcher Nightmare of the Wolf, which is coming out on August 23rd.
Yeah, that one features Vesemir.
Yep.
It's sort of the kind of a master for
he's the old guy who acts as Geralt's mentor in the games. Yeah. If you're more familiar with the games than anything else, that's who he is.
I don't think he's shown up at all in the main series.
Well, not yet. Yeah. In fact, he doesn't really appear much in the games until he's in the first game a little bit. Until, you know, you branch out and go off to the other parts. And I think he shows up a little bit, but he's a bigger, more major character in Witcher 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. Damn, this franchise is really kicking off, isn't it?
Yep.
I would say so.
Oh, yeah. Ah, man. And I knew the first two seasons were going to be kind of weird simply because they're mostly based around the first two Witcher books, which were largely short story collections. rather than like the what's sometimes called the saga, which is like the other, I think, like 4 or 5 books in the series. Or I think it's, I can't remember. It's been a while. But it's weird because those original short stories were essentially made up to be like sword and sorcery versions of like fractured fairy tales. Like they were, like the Grimm's fairy tale specifically. Which is why, you know, you will occasionally, like in the games, for example, will come across references to like Hansel and Gretel or, you know, Red Riding. Actually, scratch that. There's literally an entire part in the last DLC where you have to play an entire fairy tale world inside of a fairy tale book, and you end up like running into you end up running into the big bad wolf, who hasn't been able to see Red Riding Hood because she fell down a well and broke her neck. You run into the little matchstick girl. You guys are familiar with the little matchstick girl, right?
Remember that one?
Yeah. She's moved up to selling drugs now. Yeah.
Oh my god.
And then you come across Rapunzel. By the time you've gotten to Rapunzel's tower, the prince who climbs up to the tower decided he wanted to try like building a staircase instead of constantly having to climb up her long hair, and he ended up messing up halfway through and fell to his death. So by the time you get to Rapunzel, she's just took her hair and fucking hanged herself with it. Yeah.
I can't tell you, like, my camping friends are still pissed at me because I have not played Witcher 3 yet.
Yeah.
I have got to get around to doing it. This sounds hysterical.
But, yeah.
Like, in a sick way.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that I'm, like, weird or anything.
I mean, yeah. Well, we already know. Yeah. And finally, we got a trailer for Marvel's What If series.
Yeah, and this looks pretty cool. It's a lot of their... Seems like they're doing adaptations of a lot of their weird side story stuff in the comics. I think the Marvel Zombies show up a bit in this trailer. Who is it? Captain Carter? Mm-hmm. When Peggy Carter becomes a super soldier.
Mm-hmm.
What else? There's like Killmonger helps out Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of like the beginning of Iron Man when he gets ambushed with weapons from Stark.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. Chadwick Boseman voices Black Panther in this. Sort of his last bit of work with Marvel before he died.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. And a lot of neat stuff in here, and a lot of the actors are reprising their roles in this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good.
Mm. Yeah. The What If series, as far as like Marvel is concerned, they've done a lot of fascinating storylines over the years. Like for example, one of my personal favorites is What If Captain America came back before he was. What if Steve Rogers was unfrozen earlier than he was in the comics when the other Captain America was still running around? So for those who don't know, Steve Rogers kind of. The Captain America that after World War II in the like 50s and 60s became like one of those weird like commie smasher type characters. The real sort of Captain America kind of got resurrected in the 70s. The late 60s? I can't remember. The Marvel canon is so extensive and confusing, I can't fucking remember. But... Steve Rogers gets unfrozen and he ends up, you know, forming what becomes the Avengers. But the idea is that he comes back when the other guy is still going around. And by this point, that Captain America is like still going on his McCarthyite rampage. And he ends up, and Steve Rogers ends up beating the crap out of that guy. Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of Captain America, because. We don't have it here on the notes, but we might as well fucking talk about it. Did you see that shit show hissy fit that Fox News gave about the fact about from recent Captain America being quote unquote political?
Disillusioned about the government.
Yeah, and Dean Cain.
At least the plot for two of his MCU movies.
Yeah, and Dean Cain went on Fox News and embarrassed himself before. I mean, embarrassed himself.
Possibly more. Embarrass himself anymore.
Yeah, than his regular movie career, but.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a nutter, is what he is.
I have to remind everybody, Captain America first debuted to America on the cover of Captain America comics in the late 30s, giving a right hook to Hitler's jaw. At a time before America had entered World War I, World War II, and when Hitler still had really good PR in the United States.
Yeah. Like, his whole thing is he expects America to be held to the standards of his ideals.
Yeah.
And so he's, like, been very critical of Nixon during the Vietnam War.
He actually, during the Vietnam War, there was a whole point where he actually completely gave up his whole costume and, like, got a more generic, like, black costume with, like, a gold shield. Yeah. Because he just couldn't wear the fucking costume anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
I believe he's definitely did some stuff about 9/11.
Oh, yeah. One of his most like common enemies is the Sons of the Serpent. You guys are familiar with those guys, right? Okay, the Sons of the Serpent are specifically meant to look like they're specifically based to be like KKK offshoots, and they dress in like snake-like regalia because they specifically take their imagery after the Gadsden flag, you know, the Don't Tread on Me flag.
Yep. Oh my
God. That was back in the 70s, okay? None of this shit is new.
Yeah.
Captain America has always been political. That's his whole point.
Yeah. That's his name.
Yeah, that's why he's called Captain America.
Like, it's not even new in the movies.
No.
For as much as people are like, oh, they're woke now. It's like, what if Captain America's always been critical of things?
Did you not watch Marvel Civil War?
They just
kind
of
missed it.
Yeah.
So him thinking there doesn't need to be government oversight of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Because their bureaucracy could slow everything down and cause more chaos.
Yeah, whereas, you know, Iron Man wants the opposite. He wants, you know, heroes to have to register with the government. And all this, this shit has always been political. God damn it.
Yep.
Yeah, literally, Iron Man starts with Tony Stark being ashamed that his namesake is being used to fight the wars in Iraq and all that in the Middle East. Like, puts an end to that after nearly being killed by his own weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Also, I just want to point out, everybody at Fox News has been vaccinated.
Yeah.
All of them have. Every single one of them. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Brian Kilmeade, all of them, they've been vaccinated. They're required to. They couldn't work in that building otherwise.
And they're getting paid too much to not work.
And, you know, if you remind people of that shit, because they're turning this vaccine straw man like bullshit up recently, because this is the current thing that they can use.
Yeah.
But anyway.
The whole thing where Tucker was complaining the NSA was spying on him.
Yeah.
Then revealed he was talking to Putin.
Well, he was trying on the show. The claim that he's making is that he was trying to get an interview with Putin.
Yeah, and the government's not going to be trustful of anybody trying to get a hold of Putin.
Yeah.
Even if it's for completely legit reasons.
Yeah.
They're going to be 100% sure nobody's selling shit to them.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. We got ourselves a show, folks, which we somehow managed to make over 2 hours. Well, let's see. Over 2 hours. Yeah. Despite the fact we didn't actually have a whole lot of material this week, weirdly enough. So I'd like to remind all of our listeners, you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or really any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So, with that, I have been your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Teresa Sammons and Chris Logi, I want to say good night, sleep tight, and as I will continue to remind people, especially considering that the Delta variant is now the dominant variant here, get your vaccine shots, please, because we don't want to have to tackle you in the street and inject this shit into you by force.